All right, welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I'm Chad, I'm your host. We got two of the guys with us today up in the North Coast, Chip and Jim. Unfortunately, Dale couldn't be with us today, but he'll be back in the fold pretty soon. How are you guys holding up after this weekend?
Go for it, Chip.
Oh, God. Well, I got two things. Go Cavs. And that's kind of where my mindset has been as I've been following them. And also Georgia's defense. Hopefully we draft someone from that defense because they look awesome.
Yeah. At this point, we could use all the help we can get. It was a pretty depressing game and weekend because of it. Buckeyes look good. It would have been a nice one of those nice weekends with a nice Cav story, Buckeye story, and Brown story. But man, it could not have gone more wrong for the Browns this weekend. So we'll get into that a little bit. My drink of the day, I've got two in front of me. I have a whiskey sour, and I've got a sour beer, and I just thought that was pretty fitting given the way I felt after having to sit through that whole game.
Yeah.
And you guys know we have I have a handful of friends down here from New England. So a handful of them stopped by the bar.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
San Diego is an annoying Patriots town for some reason.
Yeah. They were merciful enough to leave at halftime, basically, because they were just politely, like, quietly sitting watching the game, just like chattering to each other, and it didn't take long before it was kind of out of control, and they were just like awkwardly like, like, we're gonna go check out the second half of the game somewhere else, guys. And I was like,
okay, so, yeah. Honestly, they didn't even have to watch the second half of the game. They didn't have to watch after the second drive.
Yeah, time to call it quits though. But it was like reminiscent of other times where you've got a few other fans in the house, and it's like, well, and it's going back and forth. It's fun when you're winning. It feels pretty cool when you're getting absolutely demolished, man. It's just like,
yeah,
a game not to show up to.
Yeah, that was bad. So you got a whiskey sour, Chad?
Yeah, I just made a nothing special. I use bourbon. From Bullet or Bullet Rye, typically when I'm making mixed drinks, because I just think it's a really even and pretty affordable bourbon to mix with. And if I'm going to use something expensive, I'll just drink it, or if I'm doing something that's really bourbon heavy, like a, maybe like an old fashioned, I'll use a bourbon that I want the flavor of. But it's pretty good. I did the egg white foam on top.
And how do you do that? I've seen that in recipes and on menus, but I've like been scared to try.
Yeah. Well, there's multiple ways to do it. You can just shake it. You can literally just do the egg white in your cup and just, or in your bar cups, and then just kind of shake them.
Uh-huh.
I use one of those little whiskers, one of those, things you always see to like mix.
So like a raw egg.
Yeah. It's just the white. You just do an egg white and I throw it in my
This is probably a dumb question, but how do you separate it?
So you can do it different ways. Some people put it through a little strainer because the egg white will go through and the yolk will sit up top. Yeah. I just crack the egg and I just kind of toss it back and forth until the white starts pouring in, and I just keep catching the yolk. So I do that in a separate cup and I just whisk it. And when it becomes really foamy, like you're whisking like milk to do like a meringue, when it becomes really foamy, you just kind of pour it on top of your
drink. Have to try this sometime, to be honest. I've never done it.
Is it good? What does it taste like? I mean, does it taste like egg or like?
No, not really. So the white just gives it like a foamy top. It almost is like just this little cappuccino top sitting there the whole, and it just stays like that the whole drink.
Is there flavor to it?
A little, but it's not super strong flavor. It's just the texture more.
Huh.
Kind of like a meringue. It doesn't have any sugar in it, but it's got like a meringue kind of like
consistency.
So it sounds like a lot of work for not a lot of taste. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, it's not a ton. But it's not a lot of work. I mean, I just crack the egg, you toss it back and forth 3 or 4 times, and then you just spin it with a little whisk. It's pretty easy.
It definitely sounds cool. I want to try it.
I see my menus all the time, man, and I'm like, I'm just not that adventurous right now.
Yeah, and you can taste it, but it's not like, oh my gosh, this taste of egg makes the drink. It's just kind of a nice, cool texture.
Doesn't it, like, don't they put those in like whiskey fizz or something like that?
Yeah, there's a couple drinks with a egg white top, but whiskey sour is my favorite, and so I just, you know, lime bitters, whiskey, a cherry, and a whisked egg.
Nice.
But it's good. And then I got a sour beer that's actually pretty cool. It's from Second Chance Beer Company out here, and it's called Fistful of Gummies. And on the front, it's like, it looks like a Sour Patch Kids package.
That's pretty cool.
But I just felt like this weekend was just kind of a fistful of like sour candy. So
yeah.
What about you guys? What are you guys drinking up?
I have a Dogfish Head Distilling Company. So that, you know, they have their beer, but I guess, you know, with the whole canned cocktail thing that went on. I have a whiskey sour. It's like a cherry bergamot whiskey sour. It says scratch made whiskey with natural flavors flavored with oak chips.
Not
bad. Yeah, it's not bad. So honestly, this is the first cocktail in a can that I've had, because it always just made me, you know, those things you can get at like a grocery store, those buzz balls that are just like cheap alcohol. And
I know you're talking about. Yeah.
I just feel like cocktails in a can is just an immediate hangover. Like you finish a can and you already have a headache.
Yeah. You know who makes a really good one? So the company that spun off after Ballast Point sold their brewery to Constellation, that group spun off and started their own distillery. And then they started making their own cocktails, and they are really good. But I've had a couple canned cocktails that are just, but like really bad.
Yeah. This one's not bad. I mean, it's not something I'd probably ever get again, but.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We got Chip.
So actually before the pod started, my wife and I split a Christmas, Great Lakes Christmas ale, but it was a bourbon barrel aged Christmas ale. It was a special edition. Came in a big bottle. We split it, and I really liked it. But unfortunately, we drank it all before the pot. So currently, I'm drinking some nice cold Bud Light.
Switching it up.
Yeah. And actually, what's nice about these ones is I got them in the 36-pack from Costco.
More bargain. So,
yeah. Yeah.
More beer for your buck.
Yeah. It goes
very
down.
Thrifty of you.
That's smart.
It tastes like I saved money, so that's always good.
Yeah.
Surprised you didn't get the Kirkland brand.
Yeah.
None of those BS 12 packs. You're going for 30 plus.
Yeah. 36. It'll last you a week or so.
Yeah.
30s just always reminds me of Keystone College. Yeah.
I miss Keystone, man. I haven't had one in a long time.
I bet it's just as good as ever.
I believe so.
All right. I was glad to talk a little bit of beer, because it's probably the best thing we'll talk about in this bullshit pod.
Yeah.
But
we're off to a great start. Here we go.
Yeah. So I guess to start things off, we will do some quick breaking news. Number one, for anybody that watched the game, Troy Hill did get released from the hospital. So he's on the road to recovery. For anybody that didn't know, he went to the hospital with a neck injury. He got carted off the field. Everybody probably saw. And he actually had to stay in Boston at a hospital while the team traveled home. But he was stabilized by the next morning. And so they were able to release him. And I don't know the extent of the injury or his playing status, but he's back with the team, luckily. So fortunately, it wasn't anything as serious as it looked like it could have been.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Those stretcher cases always freak me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing about Troy Hill that bummed me out was he was the guy that, you know, he every game he showed up healthy, active, ready to battle, and then that had to happen. So, I'm pretty sad about that.
Yeah, he's not any kind of elite player either, but you want to talk about not only like – he's like the defensive version of Jarvis Landry. He's solid. He always just puts it all out on the field. He tends to be just like
he's somebody reliable.
That, Yeah, somebody for that, like, for the first couple of years of his career so far, he's been really reliable. And he's actually, I forgot, he's actually older than I think of, but he's been reliable, he's been tough, he scraps, and he somehow kind of plays better than his, like, physical attributes, I think. But, yeah, wishing him the best. Hopefully he's back on the field soon, because we are always, you know, fighting thin at cornerback. So, best to him. Yeah. The other thing was, this happened actually right before the game, but I don't know if a lot of people caught it, that Andrew Billings was actually just released from the team. I had some wonder of whether they would somehow try to bring him back after the game was over. But I mean, at this point in the season, I don't know. He has stunk it up all season. And I think they were really counting on him doing anything positive for this really thin defensive line. I had a feeling he was part of the reason they felt okay letting go of Richardson and Ogunjobi, and he just has not shown up. His play on the field has been almost unnoticeable. His PFF scores have been bad, and he hasn't cracked the lineup a couple weeks, which means he isn't practicing well. So I don't know. It just it was a surprise to me that he wasn't pretty good, because with the Bengals, especially his last year, he was a really solid player. And after he opted out last year, I was pretty bummed and excited for him to come back.
Yeah.
Totally was a letdown.
I don't want to get into PFF too early if you don't want to, but there is one score I'd be curious to hear, and that would be our rookie Togiai. From what I heard, or not what I heard, what I saw actually, I know he made a couple good plays.
Yeah, he's pretty noticeable, wasn't he?
Yeah, filling in there for Billings.
He's another surprise, because we drafted him, and I felt like people were raving about how, oh, what a steal that he was still on the board and you got him. And this happens all the time, but like, you know, each draft, like, it seems like the Browns have like somebody that shouldn't have been on the board and they got, you know, way early, and that's great, but it's better when it plays out. Well, in preseason he was terrible, and then this whole season he hasn't even dressed for a game, I don't think, until today. And after preseason you're here and he was way behind, he didn't have the physical like oomph to play on the defensive line yet, and he just wasn't caught up. And you're right, he actually showed up and played this, and this is really sad to hear, but he was one of our better scoring players at like 71.
Well,
that's
a
really good score for a rookie in his first game. That's,
if you watch the game, you wouldn't think anybody made a stop, but actually I did see a couple, and Togiai was involved in probably at least two of them.
Yeah, his name was called a couple of times. He surprised me. And again, what I like about the PFF scores is it weeds out the fact that a guy shows up for one or two plays and is disappears for the rest. But apparently he must have won a lot of battles, because he played over 20 snaps and he had a 71 score. So that's a really good start for like a 22-year-old. So, hey, you know, at this point in the season with Billings gone and the fact that we're just kind of wavering, getting these young guys some playing time, some experience, and hopefully having them come around as the year closes out would be awesome. So, all right, let's move on to this game. I had a note that the Browns, you know, it seemed like they never even got off the plane emotionally last week. It seemed like they were just so fired up, and they were just playing off that Odell Beckham leaving thing, and they really just were so intense against what seemed like a pretty talented Bengals team. They might have been the only team in the AFC North I shouldn't say that, didn't lose this week. We'll get to that, but hey, they didn't lose this week, and everybody else played pretty bad. But this game looked totally different. What do you guys think was going on? They just were not in it at all.
And I'm not making excuses, Chad, but to your point, looks like they didn't get off the plane. They say if your team goes to an away stadium and you have players that are positive COVID, things are different. Like, you have to go directly to your room and you're very isolated, and there's a lot of different protocols that you normally wouldn't have to deal with. So to your point of they didn't get off the plane mentally, they might have not ever got off that plane.
Okay, I hadn't heard that actually before. That's first.
I heard it on the radio, so that was one of the things I did hear.
Okay, well, it's got to be true then. Mm-hmm. I believe it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just think I don't get it, man. They come out in that opening drive, look awesome. I mean, D'Ernest Johnson, I like the guy. And it looked like he picked up 5 to 10 yards almost every single carry. marches them down the field, and then they just completely get away from the run. Like you get down to the 5 yard line. Even on that drive, they abandon it. Once they got into the 10 yard line, they're like, okay, well, screw the run.
Yeah, just kept throwing it.
What the hell are you guys doing?
Meanwhile, you made that entire progress based on the run and the play action, and then you just escaped it.
Yeah,
you just forgot about it.
Yeah, like how do you get away from something that's working and looks great
that the Patriots didn't look like
they had any answer for, and you just get away.
To your point, Jim, and also I guess this carries over to what Chip just said too. You can easily look at some of these guys and say things like, "Man, it seems like the team just like didn't have it emotionally, and they barely got off the plane." When it comes to something like that, like where did the coaches get off the plane? Like where, you know, they shouldn't be that affected. You know, physically, when your team is low energy or there's something going on emotional or whatever it might be, it shows in the play of the team because they just don't have like the fire. But for a coach who should be very even regardless of the situation, what you just described was you know, bad play calling, bad coaching, and that has nothing to do with the team's energy and their protocols. That's just bad.
Yeah. Chad, when you were watching that, I mean, watching that first drive, was there any question about energy or motivation at all for that team?
No, not really. And, I mean, you know, they weren't Ernest perfect, Johnson, but they made it happen with the Ernest. So
he came out like a rocket. And it was like the first run was like 10 yards, 11 yards or something. And then he was like 5 yards.
Right.
5 yards.
And to that point, Jim, I remember thinking to myself, oh, if we could run the ball like this, it's over. We can't lose. We can't lose running the ball with this kind of success. And then we just got away from it. And I can't help but to feel like Stefanski's missing the game while we're trying to run the offense. Maybe somebody else needs to be there, like an offensive coordinator, to control it and stay focused.
I don't know, man. I don't know if it's – I don't know.
If you're going to make that argument, Chip, this is the week to make it, because I think a lot of people more people than ever are going to be on board with that. And it makes it harder to argue against because it's now starting to become a trend where the first drive of the game, and this is speculation for me because I don't know that this is what happens, but in my experience in hearing about football game planning for years and years from different regimes and different reporters, typically the opening drive and things like a 2-minute offense are run through with collaboration from the coaching staff, but mostly run by the head coach and the OC. And game after game, that particular drive looks
great,
really good.
I mentioned that on the last or a couple.
Sometimes it goes on, sometimes it doesn't. So, but the one thing we do know that's consistent, whether they stay good or they get bad, is that first drive is good. And so it does make you wonder, is that the drive that Van Pelt is involved in helping create, and then Stefanski takes over, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not as good?
It's like they show up to practice and they're like, all right, boys, let's hit that first opening drive. All right, we're good. See you tomorrow.
All right, pack it up, guys. Hit the tubs.
Sure as hell doesn't look like they're practicing red zone offense, because that looks atrocious.
Although, back to your point, that first drive, I think they scored 2 touchdowns. So
I would argue with that too all day.
I'm gonna disagree with you guys on that one.
Yeah, I think when you're in the end zone, you get 2 hands on the ball and bring it in.
It's like there's no time frame of possession.
No,
you can swat that ball all you want, but once you have 2 feet down and possession, that's a touchdown. There's no time frame.
I mean, I see your guys' reasoning for that because you know. Like if a running back or somebody can dive in and push the ball over.
Right, and somebody knocks it right out of his hand, you're like, well, it still made it across. Right?
Let me clarify in case you don't know what we're talking about. When David Njoku caught that pass, it was swatted out of his hands right away, and it was called an incomplete.
It looked like he caught it and turned and looked at the ref, and then the defender knocked it out of his
hand.
It was
that's what I saw. Maybe I missed something, but I saw exactly what Chad just described.
No, so he caught it, and it got swatted. Then he looked, because it was like a – it was like one of those half-assed, like barely caught, and it got swatted almost immediately. And he looked at the ref. He looked at the ref because he knew that was a piss poor shit ass.
Well, maybe he was lazy, but I think it was very lazy because he was like, "Oh, cool, got it," and then somebody knocked it out.
Yeah, that's what
like,
I thought.
Shit. But I don't even think he had the time to process that though. How fast that ball came out of his hands.
Doesn't matter if he had the ball in his hands and feet down, it's a touchdown. It can come out a millimeter or a split second after that, and it's still.
I feel
a
like
touchdown.
It'd be different if he was bobbling it or it was on the run when he caught it, but he just was standing there, caught it, and then I don't know. It's you know, neither here nor there because they end up scoring the next play. Yeah. But you're right. After that, the offense just.
The only thing I can think of, Chad, is that you and I are looking through our biased, hopeful eyes. And we're adding in like things that aren't existent, trying to
I have to
convince,
bring you guys back down
trying
to reality.
To convince ourselves to, you know, that's good. It's touchdown.
There's not much to convince me of after this game. So. I think we're all in agreement, man. It's pretty disappointing to watch that play calling, and it was really disappointing to see that even without Chubb and Hunt for the second time, they looked like they could run the ball at least to start the game, and then we'll never know because they basically just completely came off the run. Like they ran more, it looked like, in that first drive than the rest of the game combined. What happened?
I don't know what Stefanski's trying to prove with Baker or what the deal is, but there's some weird dynamic going on between them. I think.
I think it was Betonio on an interview even said, you know, he was disappointed to see we got away from the run because it was going so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he just got a huge contract because of how well we run.
But do you think this is like Stefanski's like power play? Like he's just, all right, well, it's like he's conquering.
No, I think he's playing scared. I think he wants to get up.
I don't know, man.
Run the score up.
He's
playing from behind. Like, when he plays from behind, he panics, in my opinion.
Yeah, he does. But I think that he's on this like egomania power trip. You know, I think he was like that with Odell. He's like, oh, you're the big man here. Guess what? You're not getting the ball. And then now Baker's kind of like openly going against him, talking about, oh, my shoulder was, or my, you know, my arm was fractured and I'm going to play. I'm going to go out there. And he's like, it seems like Baker's controlling the narrative of like, yeah, I'm tough. I'm going out there. I you know, I'm this guy. And Stefanski's like, oh yeah, that's how you're going to be. Okay. Then here we go. Take the team, big boy. Like, here you
I go. Hope that's not the case. That'd be pretty disappointing.
It certainly feels like that.
I'll tell you the one thing with Baker that I am getting fed up with is the commercials and just simply being Cleveland quarterback doesn't give you the privilege to be a celebrity. You have to, you know, play good too.
You can't get mad at him for that, man. That's just extra money, and you would do it too.
No, I'm getting mad.
Yeah, you're getting mad because you're seeing it, and it's like, you son of a bitch. You're not even.
It's not as funny when we're. Yeah. It's not as funny when we're losing by 40. By the
way, no, you're right, Chad. Because you know what, Chad? I do laugh at those commercials when we win, and when we lose, I'm like, fuck you.
So, the only thing I could say opposed to the coaching was, you talked about the energy on the first drive. Did it seem to you guys? Because it did to me, like after Baker threw that terrible interception on our second drive, that the team just basically deflated as if it was the end of the game.
Yeah. I'll tell you what else, though, Chad. He got lucky on a few drop balls by defenders because he threw some plays that I thought were interceptions all day. But yeah, I agree with you. It looked like the team just deflated.
It can't.
It's the first quarter.
It can't all. I know, but it cannot all. And this is the problem that I think is happening here is that everybody is so fixated on Baker and the offense. The offense, I like, yes, it doesn't look good, but it isn't bad. The defense is where all of attention should be on right now with all the
people
and what
that
happened,
you have. What happened to last week's defense?
This is Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I mean, it was Bill Belichick, but come on. I mean, it's not like he out-schemed him by coming up with some ridiculous creative plays.
No.
They ran the ball and did dump passes the entire game.
The defense is awful. Like, our defense is so
to, that's what awful. I laugh about to our text message we were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, everyone praises Bill like he's, like, you know, a genius. And he is a really good coach. I'm not taking anything away from him. But it's not rocket science to realize, oh, they're doing this well? Let's try to take that from him. And that's what he does. Why doesn't everybody do it?
I don't know. And that's the problem is because we just talked about how it looks so obvious that our team is elite no matter who is in there running back running the ball. And we just didn't. So Bill Belichick's just like, hey, here's what we should do. Here's what we should try to stop them from doing. And I don't know why our coach doesn't just make that same decision.
Yeah.
Like, what? Come on.
I mean, Dearness Johnson, that dude could go to any team and be the lead back.
Yeah, but Jim, to our offensive line's credit, I think that they deserve some credit in that.
They are.
Because
they are.
Another thing you're seeing here is it's not just Dearness Johnson's great. It's that our offensive line is making every running back look good.
They're opening up holes, but after he gets past that initial line, he's doing a lot to get that.
You're right. You're right.
And he's cutting. He's like a LeSean McCoy.
Just I agree
to,
with
the
that,
counter,
yeah.
Or just to back up Jim's point with a statistic or two, I read that Dearness Johnson forced a missed tackle after contact on two carries, along with, which is exactly to the point of, yeah, the line opens up a hole, he gets through, but he also is doing something a little extra,
yeah,
by on, you know, 25% or more of his carries, you know, breaking a tackle and making extra yards. Plus, we all have seen the fact that he, even if he's getting tackled, he's doing this almost Kareem Hunt-esque way of finding a way to get an extra yard or two out of it while he goes down, which is pure toughness. I mean, that's
you know what? Toughness. That's our running back room, though. You just described our running back room.
Yep. And the thing I like about him is that he is appreciative of his opportunity to start. Mm-hmm. He's appreciative to be in the NFL, and he doesn't take it for granted, and he goes out.
Yeah, and he's grinding.
Yeah, every time. And they just completely did not give him the chance to
get it. And it's so disappointing because, to be honest, you go down after that interception, 14-7, and really there's no reason you just don't pound the ball like the first drive again and get it right back to 14-14. You're right back in it. Even at 21-7, when that happened, you still are the best at running. There's plenty of time left in the game. You just score. Even if it takes an entire half, you score, and you're one score down, and you're a fluke away from getting ahead.
You know,
I don't know.
Do you think part of him felt like, I don't want to wear Dearness out, considering that we don't even have anyone to spell him?
Put Jarvis, I think you there. Can't think that way.
You put Jarvis in. You're in it to win it.
Yeah, we have nobody to spell him, but he's rested, he's young.
Yeah.
And it's one of those points where, hey, if you're going to run Derrick Henry for 10 years, you know, 40 times a game, Dearness has to be able to make 30 carries in a game.
And I'm right there with you. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here.
No, I mean, if that's what he's thinking, that's just not good thinking.
I mean, it all went downhill too. Even on the first drive, like after he looked good and they got into the 10, like sitting there watching it, not only from a fantasy standpoint, because I have him and I started him, but I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? Why are you throwing these stupid passes that are nowhere close? Like, I don't understand it. When you're that close and this dude literally carried you, it probably would have been an easy run for him to get in, and you just stopped it.
Yeah. All right. We better keep rolling. The next section I had was something on, I basically wrote down this season on paper versus perception. And I think what I was referring to at the time, I barely remember. I wrote some of this after the game. I think what I was talking about was looking at our opponents for this season. Like, what are you guys feeling about the fact that I think we all came into this season, for instance, thinking, well, you know, the Bengals are a pushover. We're going to kill the Patriots. And what we're looking at now is more than midway through the season, we're starting to actually see where these teams are. Yeah. How do you think that affects the Browns season? The fact that I think a lot of, I would say it sways one way. A lot of these teams that we thought were going to be not very good and we were going to have a pretty fair schedule. I mean, the Patriots just won 5 out of their last 6 games. The Bengals, you know, we pounded last week, but we thought they were going to be a pretty bad team, and they're obviously much better. I think a handful of these teams we thought weren't very good are all of a sudden better than expected.
I think it's over for us, Chad. I think it's over.
Yeah. Well, do you think that would have changed at the beginning of the season, the way you were thinking about this season? If somebody would have told you, hey, by the time you guys play the Patriots, they're going to win, you know, when you guys meet up again against them, they're going to have won 5 out of their last, you know, 6 games. Do you think you would have thought, ooh?
I mean, you can never really count the Patriots out fully like that. But
Well, I'm just going to say, D, these next 4 weeks are going to be really telling. I'm not.
My God, if the Lions take you. Oh,
well, right. Well, that's where I'm going with this. But here's the thing. I'm not. You're right, Chad, everything you said. But here's what I'm going to say. We're only one game back from the Ravens. And we play the Ravens twice in the next 4 weeks. Yeah. If by some miracle.
We're not mathematically out of it. You're right.
No, right. Well, that's what I'm saying in a positive light. And I know we look bad. And I'm not saying I have hope right now because I don't. But what I am saying is in the next 4 weeks, let's reevaluate in week 15. Because by then we'll have already played the Ravens twice. And if by some miracle we beat them two times here, you know, we could be the leader of the division.
I don't know if it's leader of the division, but I mean, there's still, I guess, wild card hopes or, you know, it's still in sight, but yeah, the AFC hasn't really looked good. Yeah. AFC hasn't looked great.
I mean, no, I guess I would say this is the AFC's technically mathematically wide open, but how are you guys feeling about the Browns' chances regardless of whether we make the playoffs? Because I think when we started this season, I thought we were definitely going to make the playoffs. And when we do, we are going to really contend with everybody. And I'm not saying that that opportunity is completely gone because there's still a chance for healthy guys to get back on the field and there's still time for development. But after this game, I walked away from the tilted stick thinking, Jesus, if we make the playoffs, sure can't wait to get pounded by the Titans or the Bills. Like, it's just, I didn't look at this team and think, okay, we just push through and we make the playoffs and then boom, Super Bowl bound. Like I was thinking when we started the season, this was just such a manhandling that it made me think, oh, we are in trouble when we play anyone good.
You just flashed something horrible in my head when you were like, oh, you know, wild card or first round, we had to get pounded by the Titans or the Bills. Just my luck. The Browns and the Bills would play in that first round. The Browns would beat the Bills and then get their ass handed to them the next game. So none of my shit could eat. I couldn't have any joy in it.
It's worst case scenario. Yeah.
That's exactly what the world but they would win, the they universe would, win a would game. Want for you.
Yeah. They would win a game that they have no business winning. And then
I think my dream scenario is, and not just because I called this before, would be Rams and Browns in the Super Bowl. And here's why. The Odell story would be huge. Oh, you wanted to play for a contender? Well, now you're on both teams.
You see the crap with him now, too. He said, like, oh, I had no intention of leaving Cleveland. My ass, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that letter. How'd you guys feel about that letter? I had kind of mixed feelings about that. I guess it was nice for him to put it out there, but it also seemed like just a straight-up Odell-style PR move.
Yeah,
like, I need everyone to love me.
You have to do that, though. You have to do that. You know,
a lot of guys wouldn't, but Odell's got a brand, man.
Yeah, so you have to do that.
I don't think he really meant any ill will on any of us or the team. I think he's just a guy that wants to be the center of the show. He wants to be spotlighted, and here he's not, and he knows that.
I don't even blame him because he's getting old, and I get the hustle. He's getting old. He's barely used on this team. He's thinking in his head probably, if I don't start getting some receptions, my career is coming to a close, so I need to get somewhere that's going to get me the ball over and over.
Right. And he was like, his first 2 years were like celebrity status good. So then after that, he took a big drop off and it's like, who is he now? No one even
tons
appreciates
of injuries.
Him.
Never got himself all the
way
back.
And we'll he wants to he rebound. I mean, I get it, but it does come off as a, not a team player move.
Yeah.
So
I think the letter was to kind of like quell that a little bit. I mean, the guy's not stupid. He knows what it looked like when somebody as loved as LeBron leaves Cleveland. So he's probably like, I'm just going to nip this in the bud. Tell Cleveland, I appreciate y'all. I love Jarvis. I love the coaching staff. Love the fans. Sorry it didn't work out. It could have been worse. I think, I have mixed feelings because I think it was probably more of a PR stunt than anything, but I appreciate the fact that he at least did it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Chip, you had wrote, did Odell cause this? Oh my gosh. If this was last week's game and not this week's game, I probably would have been like, oh, great.
Right.
But luckily they came out and showed that the first week without Odell.
I wrote that down because you know what? I really enjoy everyone I work with. We do talk a lot of Browns all day at work.
Yeah.
And everyone knows I'm a big Browns fan and everyone likes to give me crap. So all day I kept hearing everyone like at work shouting out to me, hey, did Odell cause that loss? I was like, all right, guys, I get it, you know.
Yeah. So I think there was nothing more apparent and we can debate, you know, all day, and there's no right answer. This would be the most equal case of all time of what was worse, the offense or the defense. The offense scored 7 points. The defense, you know, gave up 45. It was the worst performance I can remember in years. And I mean, I had almost blanked out. I had almost blanked out how bad this team looked when they were really bad. And this was giving me like flashbacks. It was miserable. It's like, oh my God, I forgot this is what football was like pre Baker and Stefanski. Like, this happened all the time. You got just pounded and you're just like, well, there we go. But I think the one thing that stood out really apparent was watching Mac Jones versus Baker Mayfield. And it brought me to the idea of trying to figure out what is wrong with Baker. Is it just that he's injured? Is it just the coaching and the game plan stunk? I'm trying to look on paper and on performance. Do you guys think there's anything Mac Jones does that's substantially better than the Baker Mayfield that we're used to and what he does? Because I just couldn't find that thing that he does that's like, wow, Mac Jones is really much better than Baker at winning this game by 45.
He's in a good system that puts him in position to win. I just don't know with Baker.
I think they played smart ball, well planned by Coach Bill Belichick, and the quarterback executed it well. I don't think he's better than Baker. Actually, I would probably consider Baker better. But you know what they did well? They waited for, you know, anytime they felt like the pass rush got hot, they hit a screen on him. They knew a way to slow the pass rush down and play to our weaknesses.
Yeah. I mean, Mac Jones had 140 passer rating or something like that in this game. I mean, it was just outstanding. He was dinking and dunking because he had less than a 10 yard per reception average, but his passer rating was perfect. He made no mistakes. He just found a quick open receiver. They did a ton of screens, a ton of short passes. Obviously the whole scheme on offense was take the pass rush for the Browns out of the game and play the middle of the field, because, you know, when you're trying to decide what's good on this team, the middle of the defensive line and the linebackers just don't stand up to the edge rushers and the cornerbacks. So you dip a lot through the middle of the field, and that's where you play ball. And it felt a lot like how the Browns should have been running. It's just to take little chunks and just beat them down. And the Patriots just flipped it and just did that the whole game.
And Chad, there's a narrative that I haven't heard yet, and I just wanted to bring up really quick, and maybe it's just me, you know, overthinking things or whatever, but I was McDaniel's guy when we were doing our coaching search, and I can't help but to think Josh McDaniels had this game circled on his calendar, and 45-7 tells me he had this game circled.
So for people that don't know the story, because I know it pretty well, because I was actually semi Josh McDaniels guy too. The only worry I had with Josh McDaniels was honestly the reason he wasn't hired. And it was back when they were doing their sort of hiring season. And I want to say this is when they hired Freddie Kitchens, not when they hired Stefanski, correct?
No, this is when they hired Stefanski.
Was it Stefanski?
It was also because it was on the table, I thought, for Kitchens.
It was, but they didn't go. McDaniels came in for the interview process during the Stefanski time, and the problem was something about he wanted to clear out a whole bunch of people.
That's exactly what it was. Is what he wanted to do is he's like, I want to revamp the front office. I want to revamp like everything, and all I was having was flashback. And I liked him, and I thought, dude, he's a good coach. He went to Denver. He kind of bombed. He went back to the drawing board, which we've seen in the past work. And then he's coming back for a second run. And I was kind of on board with hiring him, but I was a little nervous thinking flashbacks of when we had Mangini, of he had told the Browns organization, I'm just going to be straight with you. If I'm coming here, I want everyone fired and I want to build the organization from scratch. And I think this was just fed up loser Browns fan version of myself saying, oh my God, I'm so tired of completely firing everybody and starting over, not on board. You know, that was the one thing where I was like, I get that they didn't, why they didn't bring him in. I see why that would be so hard for them. But I think, like you, I was super excited about the potential of having him as a coach this time around. But that was my hold off, was he's going to completely start. He's going to repaint the locker rooms. He's going to rechange the nutrition staff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's starting over.
I mean, I wouldn't be okay with losing Andrew Berry because I think Andrew Berry is one hell of a GM. The problem is we're just not using his players correctly, and we're not running it right. I don't think Andrew Berry has done anything wrong, and I think he's doing an outstanding job at general manager. It's now we have to be the team. We have to have the coaching staff.
Been pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
So two things real quick that I wanted to get into, because I agree with you, and I do agree he has been picking good players. He's been doing a good job. But this was brought up to me because I heard a radio interview, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was Mary Kay, which I know you guys are probably cringing at. But she had said something like, we just should have won this game because the Browns are the much more talented team. And I was taken aback a little bit because I thought to myself, with who was on the team yesterday, and I know we like a lot of these players, and I think it's easy, but this is always happening for the Patriots. So I think they're an outlier. The Patriots don't have superstar players most of the time. They win all the time. They always had Tom Brady. They have Bill Belichick. They don't have typically these unbelievable running backs and receivers. They just build a really good team the way that nobody else does, and they find everybody's best asset. But take the Patriots out of it for a second. When you look at the Browns right now, and we all came to this season agreeing with Mary Kay, but look at their roster from this week. Are the Browns way more talented than anybody right now? Who is their talent in the wide receiver position right now?
Right. And the running back room.
Is there anybody? And I think we all like Dearness Johnson, but are you looking at that and being like, wow, they have somebody that can't be stopped at running back, Dearness Johnson.
And our right tackle.
We have really good most of the line. Baker is demolished and having a terrible year. The receiver core, pretty underwhelming at this point. Well, the running backs are mostly injured. And I think we thought the tight ends were like, well, we have Hooper. He's a big money tight end. We have Njoku. He's going to come around and be amazing. And Harrison Bryan is really going to develop. But is anyone scared of any of those guys on the defense? Are you game planning against them? So
what you're saying is that when we had Odell, our receiving core was scary?
Well, I would say
it was better.
No, but I would say a team probably game plans to make sure they know where Odell is.
Right.
And I don't think that's the difference. I think my point is we came into this season with these high hopes of like, we've got Chubb, we've got Hunt, we've got Njoku, we've got Odell, we've got Jarvis. And it's like, who is going to stop all this talent? And when you look at him now, you're like, well, Njoku is, we all hate Austin Hooper right now. He's playing like garbage. Our running backs were out. Our receivers, we thought Odell and Jarvis would be great. Jarvis is playing terrible for like three games in a row. Odell's not on the team anymore. And people are still talking like Mary Kay, like we should have dominated. We have way more talent. Do we still? We have two great guards, but our left tackle has been playing injured all season. Our right tackle is out. Where's our talent? Baker is demolished. And I think it's weird that people are still talking like, do the Browns have so much talent? How are they not winning? They don't have that right now.
I think it's like you said, that was a narrative we came into the season with and it just stuck. But you're right. The talent is not there like it was in the beginning of the year. And the thing about Odell is, sure, I dog on him a lot, but I know your receiving room is better with Odell than it is without him. All right, there's no question there. The problem with him is just chemistry.
Yeah, and that problem carries on. We'll get to that later for right now anyway. The only other thing I have to say on the Browns, and you guys can jump in if you have anything else you wanted to add, but two things on Baker's play because it was concerning. And again, I'll just keep giving him for the time being because we have no other option, the injury excuse of the fact that he's banged up and off. But one, back to mixing Stefanski with Baker and both of their poor performances this week, where's the long ball? I thought the point of this was to run the ball, pound the rock, and then do some play action where you can get a guy open down the field.
Yeah.
He had two missed throws to Donovan Peoples-Jones, who shows a lot of talent, but he makes like one elite play a week at this point in his career. He's kind of like an elite kind of one play, two play guy, but those were misfires. Like, where is that offense of like on the ball, but then let Baker launch it? Let Baker, you know.
I don't think he's got it anymore, Chad. And also, I think that his long ball or those passes to DPJ you might be talking about, a lot of them are off target. They're over him. They're just not there for DPJ to make a play. Yeah, he's over.
I think he's playing afraid because in college you don't have that much scrutiny. I mean, you do have scrutiny on you, but I mean, not as much as the NFL. And like, you
there's a lot more freedom in the college.
Yeah. I can't tell if he's just like he's injured and he's just so unsure of himself or if he's gotten into his own head. That's what we'll find out.
I think he's unsure of himself and he's gotten into his
own head. And then my biggest concern with Baker, I think yesterday after watching Mac Jones like just pick apart the Browns defense with little play after little play, Baker injured or not should be able to do that. And he's not. I think he's looking for big plays and he's waiting too long to make them. And then he's tentative and then he's getting killed. And the one play that concerned me probably more out of Baker than even that terrible interception he threw, just because we don't know the details of the route or what he might have saw, was that free play. The Browns are down. The Patriots jumped off sides. And at the snap of the ball, you saw Baker point. So you know he saw that. And he drops back. He looks around. And then he lets go like a 6 yard or a 9 yard pass. Yep. Dude, how are you not launching that to the end zone?
So funny you say that, because at the time I was watching this game at work and everybody said the same exact thing you just said, Chad. We're all like, what? That's what you chose to do? You knew it was an offside. You knew you had a free play.
You roll out. You take the riskiest play down the field you can to try to pump your team up. And if it gets picked off, you laugh at the fact that they run the ball back and get nothing out of it. And their defense is tired. Like, there's no loss on that play except for making a bad short pass. That was, given that he's a fourth-year player right now, that was my most concerning play of the game.
I mean,
where is his head?
Yeah, throw it downfield, man. And that's you don't know what could have happened.
He's known anything as a bit of a gunslinger. And even on the free play, he doesn't sling the gun. He just dumps a short one and gets nothing out of it. And it was like, so frustrating.
So let me ask you guys this then. Do you make a move in free agency next year?
I mean, I had written that little list before. We'll get to it's something I would say this. The only thing I would say, because I'm not ready to count out Baker, just because I'm willing to believe that there's a chance that this all stems from the way we're playing offense and our and his injuries. I know that's still a possibility that that's really what's wrong. But I think if you're Andrew Berry and you're not looking at it, you're not doing this team justice.
Yeah, I as much as I do have in the back of my mind wants to move on from Baker, I don't see it happening, and I think that we've come too far, and we're gonna play Baker. Also, the fact that next year he should be healthy, and not coming injured, is another aspect that I mean. Would you rather have healthy Baker or so and so is going to be a question. Okay.
Yeah, and we're about to get to some of those because I have a list for you guys.
Yeah.
So let's take a little mini halftime break before Jim rants about one more short.
I see it.
I just want to say for our short halftime intermission, this fistful of gummies soured by Second Chance is amazing. It tastes like a liquid alcoholic Sour Patch Kid,
and
I love it. It's really good.
Who's that by?
It's by Second Chance Beer Company.
Hmm.
It says right on the side, taste reminiscent of your favorite sour candy bears. Obviously, they don't get very specific, but I think we pretty much know what that is.
Yeah.
And it's even got a pairing. Pair with a Belgian waffle with berries or a salad with peaches and goat cheese.
All right.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Man, that's pretty awesome. I love that. I love what they're doing there.
Yeah.
This one was brewed for all the sweet and sour lovers. This fruited kettle sour combines lush flavors of raspberries, blueberries with a sour finish that for a brew that's nothing short of liquid gummy candy.
Chad, I was just thinking to myself, like, boy, that would taste nice in like the spring or summer. And then I just realized, Oh, yeah, you live in San Diego.
Yeah, it's like 84 degrees this week.
Because I'm thinking it's cold here.
It's 84 degrees until 5 o'clock when the sun is completely gone and it's pitch black. And then
it did start snowing. It did start snowing. I think it was yesterday, Jim. Was that right?
Wow, already?
It's yesterday. It was Sunday, though. It snowed. Sunday, it like snowed.
I know. Yeah, like it actually Green Bay. I saw the videos of that. Sticking.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, you guys. It's wintertime, and you guys are –
I like it
until April.
I know everyone calls me crazy, but I've grown to like it.
I like it too until it goes on forever.
Yeah, that's true.
I like it.
Or you got to get up in the morning.
It does last long, but it, you know, if we could push it back, like some years you get it to like mid December when it starts. I'm cool with that. I can do that.
Yeah. Well, you know what I missed when I was living in San Diego? I remember thinking to myself, "Boy, you know what I'd like to do is put on a sweater or a hoodie." And I just never found a season that I can do that.
That's what I was going to say, Chip. It is. That's what I like about the wintertime is like you can just put sweatpants, a hoodie on, some like fuzzy slippers and just sit.
Here's the problem. And you guys didn't live here long enough because now it gets to like 62 degrees. And I'm like, oh, time to throw on a hoodie and then snuggle up by the fire. I'm just kidding. I'm not that soft, but I would say that you can find an excuse where it barely mists or it's foggy and you're like, ooh, a chilly day. You can tell the people that came from the East and are looking for like that some excuse reason to be a lazy piece of crap and eat pizza and watch TV on a Saturday and bundle up because it's like 61. It's a little bit foggy and you're like, ooh, I better stay in today. You're just trying so hard.
That's nice, man. Yeah, that is one thing I enjoy about wintertime.
Answer me this. I think Cleveland's a great city. I think people who knock on Cleveland, 90% of them have never been there or they're from there and we're just having some fun. But the weather is what kills Cleveland, and I think it's just the length. If it snowed and got really bitter cold, like lake effect, wind and cold – just December through February, and then March came and it was actually spring where it was like 60 degrees or whatever.
That'd be nice.
Man, I think, talk about a change in housing prices. It would be such a like amazing place to live.
Where I think a lot of people miss out on Cleveland is they don't actually live in Cleveland, but they claim Cleveland and they live places like Strongsville or Royalton. And then they just get stuck there and they never leave. And then,
you got to travel. It's the same thing here, except for it's like to be stuck in Ocean Beach isn't that stuck, but you got to move around and go like
there's
Cavs games and enjoy
that was what I was going to say. Cavs games, but Chad, there is so much lakefront activities that people just don't participate in, but they want to claim Cleveland.
You got to hit some restaurants for sure. Yeah. I know a lot of people in Cleveland that live in Strongsville and they refuse to like go enjoy any of Cleveland and they're like Cleveland sucks. I'm like,
I know my wife
it probably does for you.
We like to really participate in lakefront activities and we have so much fun.
Yeah.
So the one thing that Cleveland does lack is something that has a national draw. And I know people say it all. Oh, we have the Rock Hall. I'm so sick of hearing that. Like no one from any other state in the country is like, oh my God, I have to take a vacation to Cleveland to go to the Rock Hall. Like there's nothing, there's no major draw. Like, you know, people will go to Los Angeles, people go to New York, and there's a bunch of things that people want to go see. But like, what are you coming to Cleveland to see? When we had LeBron,
you're right. But in that same aspect, you're not going to Detroit for anything. You're not going to Chicago. You're not going to these other cities.
Chicago are. People are going to Chicago from all over the place.
Yeah, I know, but not for like a thing. Yeah, it's just because they think it's going to be great. I mean, I don't know.
We can offer the same activities as Chicago. We have a better chef. We have Michael Simon.
All right. Okay, so This I'm assuming, Chip, that nobody deserves a dog of the week this week on the team. Is that
that's fair? Correct? I don't have a dog of the week, and
you
I want to nominate
38
one.
Points. You don't get to be
no.
You don't get a dog of the week. So sorry, but luckily, when you lose by this many points, you definitely get an asshole of the week. So we are moving on to my favorite segment, Jim's asshole of the week.
All right, so this one was pretty easy. I'm straight going with Coach Stefanski on this one. And the reason I'm picking him is because I'm absolutely tired and fed up and sick of this guy sitting there with his smug, stupid ass, half shaven face at a podium, never owning up to shit, always giving these stupid reporter answers. Well, you know, it was a team effort, blah, 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 blah. It's just still stupid bullshit and never owning his crap. He can call out everything all he wants, but he never takes ownership of his mistakes. You know, and that it, and it drives me absolutely nuts. You fucked this game up, dude. You are too. He reminds. Sorry, Chip, but he reminds me of you with this with this play calling shit. He's so stuck on it that he just.
If my bus is on fire, I'm driving it off the cliff with me.
And that's and that's what he's doing. He cannot get out of his own way. It's like he has this, like, axe to grind with everybody that, like, I don't know, it's in his head that he thinks that everyone's questioning his ability. Well, yeah, dude, it's not working. And if it's not working, you as the leader of this team need to be the one that says, okay, we need to go back and we need to try something different. We need to figure this out. He's just too stubborn to say, I'm broken and I need help.
Right.
He can't do it.
And Jim, that goes back to, like, I always say this every year with our coaches. Everybody wants to come in here and be the lone savior.
Yeah.
Don't be the lone savior. Be the team savior.
Yeah.
Be the guy that works with his staff and saves it as a group. But everybody wants to come in here and be like, I'm calling the plays. I'm going to be the guy that saves Cleveland. Well, yeah. You fucked us up again. And that's what every – do you see a pattern here? Every coach comes in here and does it.
And well, initially when we took him
– Dale. I got to jump in for Dale for a second. So Dale would make the point that, you know, he likes – the fact that Stefanski can call plays, because when you have a great play calling offensive coordinator, he gets moved into a head coaching position somewhere, and then you're sort of stuck starting over.
Unless you're Eric Bieniemy.
no one will ever hire. The only problem I have with that after this much time is the Browns' offense and play calling is not that desirable, and running the ball is not what's going to draw a team to calling you. Creativity and things are. And after this many great starts with pitiful play calling after, I think I'm with you guys that it's a little bit stubborn to not say, you know what? I'm going to take a step back for a minute. Let somebody else call the plays for
a couple games.
Yeah.
And that will let, and I am for that. Historically, that's my preferred breakdown, but I do get Dale's point of, when you have the coach calling the plays, you hope over years he just keeps getting better and better at it, and it never leaves.
No, I think
but he can go back to it.
Yeah, that's
a great
point. He can
call the plays,
yeah,
and he can let Van Pelt call them for a couple games, and if it works, it works. And if somebody decides, hey, we want Van Pelt as a head coach, well, that's fine. Stefanski, at worst, can go back to calling plays, and maybe he'll be better at it.
But maybe he'll also have the time as coach to learn what he's looking for as a coach and a coordinator. The problem is, I think there's just a lot on the plate for a coach, and you don't need side distractions. You should accept the help while you can.
Yeah. And I want him to take ownership of his mistakes, and he never does. And I know you can't do that, but I think being able to say, yeah, I messed up. I didn't put our people in the right position to win. I should have done this. I don't think he does that. And if he did, I think you get more buy-in in the locker room and more people actually wanting to play for him.
I'll because just say he's this just too. Like, he sometimes does say something like, this is on me, but I feel like he says it in a very coach speak. Like,
yeah. Like, I don't believe that. Yeah. These guys suck. It's not on me. I'm just
as
saying,
a team, we did it. No.
Yeah. No. He says it a lot, and it just sounds like such a pre-written line.
Yeah.
Maybe you should watch that show on Apple,
But this is another reason why he's my asshole of the week. Cause like, dude, he sits there like this smug asshole. Like he's a little mini Bill Belichick wannabe. Like, dickhead, when you play like that, you don't get that right. You don't get that privilege to do that.
Do you think coaching a coach of the year got to him?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah,
I do.
He got Austin Hooper'd. He got some props and
that's
he decided
a good way of putting it.
He got some props and he decided, oh, I'm done here.
Yeah, I got mine.
Okay, we better keep rolling. I can't disagree this week, and I never thought I would say that, but he's having a bad time calling plays. And honestly, it's only his second year. He's done a good job of being head coach. This was his worst loss of the Stefanski era, of him and Baker together especially. And so it's not like I'm ready to collapse it, but it is maybe time for him to reevaluate some things.
Yes.
And I wouldn't be against that. We're going to move on to the PFF roundup. Before we just scroll through some of these, do you guys have anybody who you specifically like? Let's start with the offense. Is there anybody who you guys are dying to find out about?
D'Ernest Johnson.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the only offensive player I was curious.
So I would highlight D'Ernest Johnson too, because I thought he played a lot, and he was one of the few people that seemed to stand out on the team, and he scored a 72 today, which is really good for him. And he led the team in offensive snaps, and that includes quarterback, obviously, because Baker went down. He led the team in snaps. Him and like Joel Batonio, and I want to say Wyatt Teller were like the three snap leaders, which makes sense. And J.C. Treader, and I think he got a lot of points on that first drive when he was really just carrying the team. But like I always say about PFF, this shows that on all those plays where he wasn't getting the ball, he's still doing his job, which is even more reason for him to have been more involved in this.
I'm sure it calculates like pass blocking and.
Yeah. And he's playing great the whole game. And it's a shame that he didn't get more opportunities, because they're pretty limited for him given who he's got to play behind. So the guys on the offense I wanted to highlight obviously are the quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield, I think, scored his worst score in his entire career with the Browns yesterday. And you know, he had a really rough 2019. So that's pretty bad. He had a 33.1, which is a large fail. He played 35 snaps. Case Keenum came in, and I didn't realize how much Case Keenum played. Baker played 35 offensive snaps. Case Keenum played almost 25. And Case Keenum also was not great, but scored a 56. I mean, notably better than Baker Mayfield yesterday. And I think all of us would probably think that Case Keenum is not the quarterback Baker is, which is the only reason I ride on the idea that something is just wrong and something that can be fixed, I hope. D'Ernest Johnson was great. Our receivers were bad. Our best one was Jarvis, and he had a 57, which is not even a starting score in the NFL.
Yeah,
You need to probably be around a 65 to be a starter, and he wasn't there. He just stunk. Our linemen were decent. I mean, our linemen, some of them were about Treader and Teller were about 60, which is pretty bad for them. Batonio was great as usual at an 80. Blake Hans was good for Blake Hans at a 58, but that's bad.
That's good for Blake Hans,
but
though.
It's good for him. I mean, it's been one of his best games. He stinks, but what are you going to do? He's our third.
Well, he's a guard. He's not even a.
He's our third team player. He's a guard playing tackle. Yeah. He's going to stink all year. He can't handle that position.
He's really a guy from the street. He's not even a guard.
We weren't able to pull somebody in to play that position better, because it's clear we're stuck with that the whole season, and he's bad. And the worst part is you keep him on the team for next year, because he's not even supposed to be playing this position. I would love to have him filling in for one game for Wyatt Teller, but that's not what he's doing. So, and there's not much to talk about in the offense. It's just depressing. Our team was in the 30s to 50s. What a joke.
Yeah. Before we move to the defense, can I just nominate a quick dog of the week? As I keep hearing about all of our running back success and getting good scores, I want to nominate running backs coach Stump Mitchell as dog of the week, just because no matter who he has, he's going to look good.
Yeah, and our offensive line is good, but like I said, this was not their best game. They did not score like they usually score, and I think part of it's because a lot of them are just elite run blockers and good pass blockers, and today they were pass blocking nonstop, and guys like Wyatt Teller is pass blocking next to a guy that can't do anything, which makes his job a lot tougher, and so that was that was rough. But you're right, Stump Mitchell, and it's not just D'Ernest Johnson, who we all think is pretty talented, but he's developed a lot. I don't think he used to be this talented, and he has just turned guys into just stars. Moving on to the defense. Room.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I think he sets a tone that has to be followed. And he's got, man, have you ever seen the personalities of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt? They're friends, but could you imagine coaching two different guys?
Right.
One of them is like joking around and loose and messing around the whole time, and the other one is so stern and so focused, and they're just, the guys are all over the place. And that's not to mention the fact that Demetri Felton, before he was hurt, was scoring PFF scores in the 80s regularly too. And that dude has no resume. So Stump Mitchell really knows what he's doing with these guys. On the defensive side, it was all over the place. I would like to just mention before I even get into the defense that the Browns overall score for PFF, you know, they score the whole team based on just basically an average compilation score. The Browns score for PFF this week as a team was a 49. Oof. And according to John Costco, who is the lead analyst for PFF, that is the worst score of the entire Stefanski era. It was, and it's not even close. I think the closest one he had was, they said, his first game against the Steelers, they scored like in the mid-50s or something and had a really bad game. But 49, they did, as a team, they didn't even break 50. That is so sad and such a, like a testament to how bad they were overall. We talked a little bit on defense about Tommy Togiai. I mean, it's easy to jump out and say, you know who's awesome every game, no matter what, Myles Garrett. He was an 81, and that was in a game where Bill Belichick's only goal on offense was to make sure Myles Garrett was uninvolved, and that dude still scored an 81. You want to talk about a beast? That guy's unstoppable. For the most part, besides Tommy Togiai, who we already covered, there was only one other player on the defense who might as well have even showed up. Would anyone like to guess?
Hang on a second. Mac Wilson?
I'll give you a hint. Would have been the last person I would have ever guessed.
Mac Wilson?
Mac Wilson scored a 79.
Bye, guy.
I think no one else on this team. And what a day for Mac Wilson to have his second good game of his career on a day where we were just miserable, just to like rub it in my face. It's like, see, I can be good when I want to, just this one time when everyone else is so bad we can't possibly win. I'm not sure anybody else on our defense scored more than a 62. I mean, yeah, right? And we've got all-stars, and we've got young superstars just waiting to come around, and we have three guys on our team that are scoring in the 70s or above. This just cannot happen again. This was terrible. So there you have it. I'm as sour as ever again after I was feeling a little better talking with you guys, and then I had to go over that segment. Whose idea was that? Ugh, miserable. to answer your question on the little chat, Chip, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was terrible in his like 20 snaps, but
yeah, that was shocking to me because I was like, yay, JOK's back. And then I'm like, did he play? I didn't even see him.
I mean, they released him off of IR like 2 days ago. I didn't. Right. I'm honestly surprised I'm surprised he played 15 snaps or whatever. He was barely out there. And another thing to bring up, speaking of joke, our main three linebackers were Mac Wilson, Sione Takitaki, and Walker. When did we go back to a defense that's playing three linebackers? I thought the entire point of this defense was to get the defensive backs out there, and we played those three linebackers a majority of the game. Like, looking at their snap counts, it's like there's too many linebackers out there too often for a team that is designed not to be playing linebackers.
I don't think Joe Woods knows what he's doing.
I'm starting to think that it's hard to argue any other direction. The guy doesn't – we didn't make any changes to our defense throughout that game.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't made barely any changes to our defense. You know, I told him – I started the season saying, not going to count the first 2 months because defensively there's too many new players. It's going to take them forever to get together. And I know they played Bill Belichick, but last week they came out on fire and they had all that heat and they killed the Bengals. And then this week, you can't go the opposite direction. You at least have to show up.
Right.
So, all right, moving on to next week. We're playing the Lions, and this could be just, I mean, if they take them lightly, they just went toe-to-toe with the Steelers, but yeah, this may be team trying to get off the Schneid. Let's just hope they come out against the Lions, like, with a wrath, just ready to explode and not take them for granted and think, okay, we got an easy one this week, because I just don't think you can. The Lions are grinding every week and losing every week, so you need to come out and just pound the Lions. I think there's no chance Nick Chubb's not back. I think Kareem Hunt probably won't be back for another week or two, would be my guess, but Nick Chubb should be back. Our line minus the right tackle should be back. What do you guys think? Do you have any thoughts on how to play the Lions, or what we need to do to make sure we come out and do to this team what we should do to this team?
Well, blitz the absolute hell out of crappy Jared Goff.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't followed the Lions. All I know is they lose, and then somehow they tied the Steelers. That's all I know.
Yeah, on that note, if they play – oh, you're right. On that note, if they play like they played the Steelers and we play like we just played the Patriots, guess who's coming out of that game victorious? Yeah. Not us.
Yeah.
But you also have to think, too, the Lions have extra motivation, man, because they have zero wins. And I think they're going to be playing to win. They're going to be playing hard.
Yeah, no one wants to be the first 0-17. Well, they want to be 0-17. It'd be 0-16.
Yeah.
And one. So does that put you as 0-16 classified, like,
yeah,
you know, part of that group?
I had this conversation at work. I'm like, so how does this all work out then? If they don't win a single game, does that tie negate the fact that?
I don't know. That's kind of a.
They're not 0-17.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah,
they're not the first 0-17. But they didn't guarantee that.
They didn't win, so it's what is.
Let's hope. Let's hope they finished that game and said, phew, "We're not."
But Jim, they didn't lose them all either.
I know. I don't understand. I don't know what that, like. It's still. I mean, there's no getting away.
If I was on a team, I would take that to the grave. I did not lose 17 games.
Let's hope that's exactly what they're doing, because if they're like, we're really close, we can probably beat the Browns, then we're in trouble. If I'm Stefanski, I literally just open this week's I don't even watch the game tape from this week. I mean, what's the point? I probably walk in and I'm like, oh, let's start watching the Lions Steelers game. Look at this team.
Here's an idea
with a team that just beat you 2 weeks ago.
And let's see what they do good, and let's try to stop it. Is that rocket science?
Yeah, it's rocket science for this team, because I don't know what the Lions do good.
Well, they
run the ball.
They have a good running back in Swift. How about, you know, we focus on him, watch his footage, see when they use him. Do they use him on
literally
third down?
The only thing, Chip. He's the only one they should be using. But sometimes Dan Campbell gets cute, like Stefanski.
Yeah, well, you got all these middle linebackers out there. Have them watch him. Have them stay on them.
Yeah, sometimes watching that team play, it's just like watching the Browns, man, because, like, you get a good run game going, and then he's like, oh, well, let's give Jared Goff a shot here. And it's just incompletion, missed throw, just stupid decision-making.
If you don't make Jared Goff beat you this week, then this game planning, you might as well just fire. I mean, we're not firing Stefanski. That's just starting over. If you lose to the Lions, or if you let the Lions put some work in you on your defense,
Woods has got to go.
I mean, that is about the only way I fire a coach midseason, because I'm super against that. But if the Lions put points up on you, you better start thinking about looking for your next defensive coordinator off of this team.
Jim.
Yeah.
So if I was playing Madden, this is where I hit that pre-snap highlight player, DeAndre Swift.
Yeah.
And for the audience, just so you know, Jim once used Madden as his resume.
I did.
Actually, that is the funniest story.
I did.
This guy actually tried to apply for a football coaching job, and and said he had coaching experience, and he was referring to.
Well, I didn't say I had coaching experience.
Well, they asked,
they asked me what my experience was, and I was like, well, I played for a little bit, like in from like third to seventh grade.
But more importantly, I have.
He's like, so you're. He's like, Madden. That's what the guy looked at me. He's like, so your experience is pretty much just like playing Madden, then, huh? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that covers it. All right, so I'm in. Where do I start?
Let's be honest, guys. And, this is middle school football.
So. He's like, but dude, you should see my audibles. I mean, I lay him down.
I'm not audible in shit. The play I call is the right play.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't know. There's not that much to get into in the Lions. Jared Goff has had a terrible year. You guys are right. They should be running the ball more, and that's kind of their highlight. Do they have any defensive players that we need to be scheming against?
Did they pick up the Ohio State cornerback? But I think he's out the whole season.
I couldn't tell you, man. Jeff, I know they had.
It was Okuda,
yeah,
Okuda's
right? Okuda's a decent cornerback, but I think he's out. At this point, if we're running the ball like we should be, this should be another Browns running game because they're not going to be able to stop the run, and we've said it week after week. And sometimes it's you know, when we talked about in the Steelers, well, the Steelers are pretty stout against the run, so maybe we do have to fix in the pass. But if we have Chubb back, fresh off a nice week of rest, hopefully COVID, you know, I didn't hear any stories where he was having a lot of symptoms or pretty sick, and we already know who's out there running right now can handle the rock. Our linemen are stout. We really, really need to get back on track. Baker hurt his knee in this game. There's nothing from the injury that makes me think he won't be playing again this week. Although at this point, if you do need a rest week, this is probably the one, and you just pump the team up around Case Keenum. But my guess would be Baker's back out there, and it's time for him to wake up. I think I did hear a quote, though, in one of my interviews that Baker had mentioned in an interview this week that he has always had the ability to get himself up when people are doubting him or, you know, when he's playing certain teams. And he needs to really learn how to do that on an every week basis. Yeah. And it just made me, like, shake my head because I get it, but that's – as true as can be, if you're Tom Brady, you find some excuse every single week to be fired up about something. You make it up if you have to. And I think it's a really easy thing to look at the Browns-Bengals game and say, dude, Baker just wants to destroy the Bengals. He just trusts he can beat that team. He wants to take it to them, and they did. And then after they did, he eased off the gas. And I think we didn't talk about it much, but that's a realistic thing that could be going on with Baker, is that he's not getting himself up for every game the way he is for others. So, all right, moving on from the Lions, we are just going to get into one or two other stories. And then do you guys want to do some game recaps, or how are you feeling about that?
I don't think we need to do game recaps. I just do want to say that the Bills absolutely annihilated the Jets.
Chip, you are on the Mayor Mike White Superman wagon. I think he threw, what, 4 interceptions this week?
Yeah, it wasn't so great. But in his defense, the Buffalo Bills have a defense that has been consistently good. Not like some teams that show up every other week. They have been consistently good on defense.
Chip, is that a Buffalo Bills compliment? Thank you, sir.
It was hard to say.
Where are you on Zach Wilson now after that? Are you, God, like, dude, this is a flash in the pan? Chad was right. This was just a Gardner Minshew story, and he's not the truth.
Yeah, I was caught up in the Zach Wilson hype, and I will admit that was a bad one. You know who else? I was caught up in the Johnny Manziel hype. I'm not a good quarterback guy.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I was on Darnold Rock for a long time before I drowned to death.
Hey, I'm still waiting on Ryan Mallett to pan out.
We all make mistakes. I'll always blame that, though, on that terrible, awful quarterback-killing franchise that just destroyed superstar potential Mike White,
Zach
Wilson, Darnold, the Sanchez, just quarterback after quarterback just goes there to die.
But speaking about quarterbacks, and I don't want to give him any fuel in case he listens to the pod, but is Tom Brady finally on his demise here?
No, I don't.
First of all, Chip, why would you even bring that up? You know Tom Brady definitely listens to this podcast. Yeah. And last thing we need is to add fuel to the Brady fire.
Right.
No, I just think off week, he was so pissed about it after the game. He did like a 45-second press conference and went to get up and leave, and they made him come back, and he only stayed for another 45 seconds. And then he got up and left for real. He was so upset at losing that team, and that is exactly the mentality of a quarterback that wins championship.
Right,
after championship.
Right.
He loses one meaningless midseason game, and he's so fucking pissed off that he's just like, I'm out.
Yeah. I'm sure that team's going to hear about it all week.
Yeah, and I long for the day when we have a quarterback, and maybe he's in the room right now, maybe he's not, but where we have a quarterback who is so bothered by a loss that he is just ready to just tear the next team in half. And we'll see. I mean, that's exactly why that guy who's not that physically amazing compared to other quarterbacks is exactly who he is, because that's how he thinks. So we got a couple sports headlines of the week, even though we're not going to shoot through these speed recaps. One we have to shoot through is the Ravens. You mentioned them earlier. We covered the Steelers, Lions. They tied. That's helpful. Obviously, Bengals didn't play. I wanted to make sure I heard from Jim with the Bills. It's a really good week for him on that front. The other one was we have to take a minute to talk about the Ravens. Dude, the Ravens lost to the Dolphins in the game where they looked like the Dolphins were better than them for
the only touchdown they scored was in garbage time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder that even though, like we said, the expectations drop with the Browns, because I think most of us now believe, like, it's just maybe not their year. But mathematically, and with some of these other teams in our own conference struggling, and the fact that you've only played two conference, four more to go, you're right in it because of games like that Ravens game. So hang in there, Browns fans. It is an easy thing to jump off the bandwagon now, but you know, you're building something for longevity, not for a one-year run. So just hang in there, try to make the playoffs again, and be a team that is going towards making the playoffs every year.
I mean,
even
last
when it's
week,
not your year.
Even if you just, you know, last week being said, there's still six or seven games left in the season, and guess what? You're only down one in the division.
You're playing everybody again. Yeah, you're playing everybody again.
This is everybody's division.
You know, it's one of those years where if you just accept the fact that, wow, this doesn't look like a Super Bowl team this year, what you want to be then is a team that, when it's not your year, do what the Steelers usually do when it's not their year. Last year was not the Steelers' year. They still made the damn playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure, they lost to the Browns, but it's like, even in a rough year for them where everybody's like, Steelers are kind of done,
Steelers
they still
were
made
good
the playoffs.
Last year, Chad.
Yeah,
but
they
broke off like 10 wins straight or something.
Yeah, it was like they were 11-0.
Yeah, and they weren't supposed to be good. It was definitely not their year where people weren't like, man, Steelers Super Bowl contender. So this is the type of year where I think you have to do that, where you just try to come in strong in the second half of the season, and even if it's not going to be your year, win some games, make the playoffs, and start to create a culture where even when it's not your year.
Yeah, this is the expectation.
Then we're going to make the playoffs.
Here's what I'll say in closure is make the playoffs and anything can happen, right? These two games against the Ravens are going to make or break what's going to happen with our playoff making
probably.
It or not.
Probably.
All right, so that's where I am lying my hat on. Give me these next 4 weeks, and then I'll hang it up. But I'm not hanging my hat up yet.
I'm with you. And again, my expectations are dropped. That's where my heart's at. I don't see it. It doesn't seem like Baker's healthy enough. It doesn't seem like the team is consistent enough, but you're right. Anything can happen if you make the playoffs, but just in, you know, making the playoffs to me would be a huge success because it now that's 2 years in a row. And now that's, you're creating a new expectation that the Browns are a playoff team, no matter what the situation around them. Because that's what other teams we've seen who have a culture. The Ravens had an insane amount of injuries last year. It didn't matter. They make the playoffs. The Steelers made the playoffs. You're trying to create that organization where you're still pretty young, And a lot of these guys haven't been in the league very long that are on this team right now. And you're creating a world where this is what you know. We make the playoffs here. And so I think that's the opportunity you have as Browns and as Browns fans is for that. Obviously, because it's the world we live in, we have to hit the OBJ story. Did anybody catch his performance yesterday?
Yeah, it was forgettable.
I'm not going to like hang on it. Like,
catch it.
I'm not going to gloat on it and be like, haha, he sucks. This is what you get. But I will say it did seem ironic that he went out there and he caught 2 of 3 passes for 18 yards. And I know he hasn't played long there, but I've seen players change teams and play better than that. The big thing that I think was noticeable that he got called out for by a lot of sources, because he put himself at risk for criticism. Yep. When you're going to do what you just did and demand out of a team. I was surprised he even played this week, but I know he's anxious to get out there. On that first route he ran.
Yeah, he pulled up.
Everybody said he cut it short, and I agree. When you watch it, he cut it short, and it led to an interception.
Well, I was reading, that's the stuff he did here in Cleveland. He would do what he wants to do to appear open. But he exactly. wouldn't complete his route.
Exactly. So he put himself, I think, at risk saying, like, oh, you know, I need to get somewhere where this is happening and this is happening. And then he runs a half route. There's an interception. And immediately it's like, well, Baker's been dealing with for the last year.
I'm going to come to his OBJ's defense on this one. That ball had no business being thrown into double coverage like that. And
I just think that's the OBJ thing. You're expecting that he's such an elite receiver on paper, at least, or on like personality, that you can throw it to him in double coverage and he's going to make something. Yeah. And he just wasn't there. Yeah, I'll agree with you. It's like, it's a tough situation. And also he's only been there 5 days. So give us some time. I mean, it was just nice that he didn't go out. And I mean, I have him in Dynasty. I'm hoping that he shapes up. I'm hoping to get some trade value out of him or get some use out of him next year. But the reality was, I think everybody was a little bit worried that he was going to go out, get 5 passes for 114 yards and a touchdown. And you'd be like, God damn it. So, and then the last topic of the day, did you guys hear the Cleveland Guardians? The baseball team, the MLB put a hold on them releasing their gear yesterday because of the lawsuit with the roller derby team.
Yeah.
They just settled it today, though, I thought.
Did they?
I think so, yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
I didn't hear anything.
What was the settlement? Did you guys hear what the original offer was?
No.
I just had to go into the story because I found it so interesting. So the Guardians, when the Cleveland announced we are going to be the Guardians, the roller derby team, obviously, we're looking for a little bit of a payday. Like, hey, we'll sell you the name, and you know you can avoid all the hassle. And I heard, at least from what I read, that the former Cleveland Indians offered the Guardians like a two figure payout. Like, we'll give you $5,000 for the name, and the Guardians were like, I heard it was between $2,000 and $5,000. And the Guardians were like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and say hard pass. The legal litigations came in. They just wanted like a payout offer. And the Indians were like, sure, we'll give you a couple $1,000s. And they were like, I feel like this is a little bigger deal than that.
Yeah.
When
you start off insulting like that, it's like, oh, okay. That's how we're going. Like, yeah, right. Now we're going to
If you
want to
make a team hold out and sue you, the first thing you do is you just insult them. I can't imagine if they were like, we'll give you $40,000, the Guardians wouldn't have been like, yes. But they're like, we'll give you, you know, $5,000, dude. We own your name. You can't do anything until we say it's okay. So at least make me something to take to the table. And I don't know. But God. All right, guys. I just wanted to get into that because when I read the initial offer and what started this whole like legal battle, when they probably could have just said, hey, what do you guys want for it? And let's talk. It just seemed kind of ridiculous. It's like, well, good for them, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody's on their side because nobody wanted that name change anyway, but rough spot when everybody else is releasing their 2022 gear and you're like, nah, we're on hold. We're on hold with our rebrand. And we basically dug ourselves a hole where we're sort of backed in a corner because we already released the name before getting your permission or paying you. And we already took down all of the Indians' names and wiped the word Indians from our organization. So now we have to go with Guardians. And so we,
we got to make it work.
Yeah. They have to make it work. So now they have no bargaining chip. They have no leverage at all, except for their leverage was, we're going to do it anyway. And now the MLB was like, nope, you can't.
How do you like let that happen? What a big oversight.
No. Kat is convinced they didn't even check. I was like, they must have checked and just thought, this isn't a big deal. Let's just do it. But she's like, dude, I've worked in big organizations, like giant billion-dollar international organizations. They might just not have even looked. I was like, oh, it's a joke. But all right. That pretty much covers us for today. It's a Browns Venting Tuesday here on the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. Make sure you guys check us out on social media. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. It's Coast, the number 2 Coast X3. And we're on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Coast to Coast to Coast. And that is, that one's letters. So like, subscribe, follow, get us a little bit of love here. If you like us, review. If you don't like us, wait until it's going to be better. And we will, we'll try to keep it up for you. All right.
As always, great tuning in with you guys. Have a good week.
See you next week.
All right. See you.